Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. Got two of my co-hosts in here with me, Big John Ruffin, Isadora Rodriguez, are in the house. We also got a special guest in the house that, you know, moving around and everything he's got going on in his life. He always makes time for this show, so he's like an unofficial co-host, you know, of the show. But let's go around real quick and give the shout-outs to Good Morning. Big John, what's going on, bro?
Good morning, everyone. A lot of birthdays with grandchildren this week. So pockets ain't what they should be, but I'm getting through.
I got to say good morning to Sharon Brown, or Sharon Bell, I'm sorry, down there in Waco. Good morning. Appreciate you tuning in. Good morning to Facebook crew, Waco, ATL, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Good morning. And we're going to go up. He just froze, but we're going to him. Hey, he's back. Isadora, good morning, brother. Can you hear us?
Morning, everybody.
All right. How's things up there?
Oh, you know, just living the dream here in Wheatsville, Brooklyn. day by day. Getting ready for Halloween craziness in New York tonight and tomorrow. Hopefully it'll be quiet around here. Well, yeah, happy to be here. Happy part of the show. Get into some of these judges.
Oh, yeah, it's their turn, bro. They're up on the list. And with that being said, I'm going to go down to, you know, Attorney Billy Clark. And Billy, when you come on, please plug your firm because folks need you. So he always makes time. And this is my Air Force brother. So we go back before the show. We're both Air Force. Aim high, you know. So good morning, Billy. Appreciate you being here, brother. Can you introduce yourself to everybody?
Good morning. Good morning. I appreciate everybody on this beautiful, beautiful Saturday morning. I'm here in Dallas County. My name is Billy Clark. I'm an attorney here in Dallas County. Yeah, my primary practice area in my law firm is criminal defense. So I'm out on the streets. I'm dealing with people's issues that matter most, the things that affect people's liberty. That's my primary area of expertise, so to speak. I also do civil rights law. So that's a good segue to what we're doing today. So I understand some of the difficulties that our fellow brothers in arms go through when they're dealing with the average citizen. So I'm here to make sure everything can, we're all protecting those rights. And then also I do civil or aviation law as well. That's my Air Force backing. I'm what you call a unofficial expert in aviation matters. So that's part of my practice there as well. On the flip side, I am running for Dallas County Judge. As a Democrat in Dallas County, I'm running against, I'll say his name, I normally don't, but people need to know. His name is Clay Jenkins. I am running against him as a Democrat to ensure that we bring diversity, inclusion, and somebody with leadership skills to the office of Dallas County Judge. So I'm here for that. So most of my duties lately have been campaigning and getting those things done. And other than that, I'm a product of Waco, Texas, and I live pretty much all over the world.
All right. You know, Billy, I know your time is limited, and you agreed to stay on with us as long as you can today, and your presence is imperative that we have you here, because I'm not a expert on the whole judicial system, you know, because as a police officer, we deal with one aspect, maybe municipal, maybe district, maybe, you know, we're limited in what we deal with. But if you would, before we even get into this topic, for and each one of us is bringing something different. I've got two judges that I have a beef with or I want to talk about, and everybody's going to bring something different to this show in relation to judges. But if you would, can you just explain to all of us how the system is exactly set up, and I know you can only speak reference to, you know, the circuit there that covers Texas and the courts there. Can you kind of walk us through who these different levels of judges are?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, first of all, for the listeners that aren't familiar with our judicial system and our court system, I'll just be real upfront and kind of give you an overview. We have a federal system, and we have a state system. we all know the federal system. If you're if there's any federal issues, federal question, or federal laws, then the federal system is going to take place. And then there's federal judges, and of course the U.S. the Supreme Court of the United States is the highest court for that. We do have other federal courts, appeals court, we call it circuit court. In the Texas area, we answer to the Fifth Court of Appeals in New Orleans, and that handles our intermediate appeals before things are taken to the Supreme Court. We have a whole host of courts. It starts at the top. Well, let me start at the bottom. You have municipal courts. Of course, those are the city ordinances, those kind of things. If you get a ticket in a city of Waco or whatever, 9 times out of 10, you're going to deal with the municipal court. And up from that, you're going to have your state courts, your district courts for misdemeanor felonies and the criminal side, and then the civil courts for in the district courts as well. Let's see. And within those courts, if you have an appeal, your level of appeal for criminal cases will be at the Texas Court of Criminal Appeal. It's not the Texas Supreme Court. Those are for civil matters. So if you have to appeal a case, just know there's two systems in Texas. Now, for civil cases, your ultimate appeal authority would be the Texas Supreme. And then, you know, you do have other appeals outside of that. At the it depends on where you live. Here in Dallas County, we have the Fifth Court of Appeals for civil and criminal matters before it goes up to the Court of Criminal Appeal. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. There's a lot more to that. There are some jurisdiction issues as far as amount and controversy. If you're suing somebody in civil court based on how much, you know, you're expecting that loss to be or what you're suing for, can determine what court you're in on the civil side. Did I kind of hit everything you needed?
Yeah, you did, brother. And I don't want you to get into weighing on the specifics in reference to these two cases because, you know, one thing we don't do here, we admire the expertise, but we don't put people out there on the chopping block for ratings and likes and views. You know me, we don't do that. But, you know, I'm going to say up front, you know, one of the things before we get into this all the way, I oftentimes hear this white judge or this black judge, Clarence Thomas, we oftentimes hear displeasure from the community in regards to a particular judge. But judges are elected. And then when we get up to the higher level, they're appointed. Your local level, they're elected. And so I have to go back. We hurt voting rights here a lot. Where are you people that aren't voting? You know, you're not voting, and these judges are coming in, and we've got judges in this country, 75, some maybe even 80. I mean, I'm 59 and retired. And in the course of everything I do in a day, I lay down sometime 1 or 2 in the afternoon and take an hour nap and get up and move on. And so, I mean, when you have people's life in your hands, and by their life, it may be their physical life or it may be their financial life. And can you stay awake for 8 to 10 hours of listening to testimony? And court is not the most exciting place you could be. And a lot of it is dry, but do you have that focus and determination? And do you know when to step away? And to society, do you know when to ask these people to step away? You know, they're not attentive enough. And there's nothing wrong with hurting their feelings. They send a whole lot of people to jail, and some justifyingly, maybe some not. And they have no problems with hurting their feelings or the family's feelings. So it comes a time, you know, if you're sitting up behind that bench with some Depends on and your hair is so gray, it's silver, and you're dozing off, and everybody in the courtroom is acting like they don't see it because no one wants to hurt the judge's feelings, God forbid. And you got a defendant sitting there at the table that's going, you know, and I didn't get the caveat up front. You will hear aggravated adjectives, colorful metaphors, better known as curse words here. I'll use them. You know, we don't use the Lord's name in vain. We don't use the N-word unless it's in the context of a quote. But, you know, sometimes this is so aggravating to see some of these issues that play out. And, of course, we hear the major ones. We don't always hear the minor ones unless they're local, and then that depends on how strong your local leadership is. But before I get into these two judges that I want to talk about, and then we're going to move from there. And John has a whole gamut of personal experience he could talk about, and we're damn sure going to go there. And then, you know, Izzy could just bring so many cases, things he's seen that just, you know, we call it a justice system. But is it justice or just us? And when I say us, I mean poor people. This justice system rolls over poor people like they just don't even exist. And I'm not talking about people who deserve to be convicted and deserve to be in jail. We're exonerating people left and right. And to Texas's credit, when you are exonerated and released from prison after these people we find have been in prison 10, 15, 20 years, Texas, ironically, is one of the highest paid that makes these people whole, that does give them they're one of the highest paid in the country. We did a show about a year ago on this, and I talked about states such as Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Massachusetts, where they just say, okay, we screwed up, we made a mistake, go out and get a job, goodbye, thank you, here's $25 in a new suit or whatever the hell they give out nowadays. You know, so that's something people need to look at. Not everybody who gets released from prison because they're exonerated is getting a couple million dollars. And for people to say, well, that doesn't have anything to do with me. Well, a lot of these people being exonerated didn't think it had anything to do with them, so they got railroaded by the system. So I'm not asking the system to be anything magnificent. I'm asking the system to be what you purport yourself to be. That's all that I'm asking to be. So I know if I go into court, I have a fair shot. Iz, what you thinking, bro? You're muted. Okay, I'm not hearing you. Yeah, Iz, I think you're muted, bro. There you go.
I mean, you know me. I think the system is pretty much running exactly as it's supposed to be running and has purported itself to be running. But when it comes to judges, and getting back to what you said about, you know, getting on people who don't vote or wondering who they vote for, stuff, there's a lot to unpack there, let alone, like you said, a lot of this affects poor people who don't have access to the education needed and the understanding needed to properly vote, know who they're voting for. But also a lot of this comes on to how the judges campaign, how much we know about these people, and also how much is actually revealed about them as they are during their actions as judges. I mean, there's a lot of problems with a lot of these supposed oversight bodies that are supposed to be holding these guys accountable, that handle a lot of their procedures and practices behind closed doors. They do reprimands and stuff like that in secret. The public doesn't know about them. The public doesn't know what's going on. I mean, I think Texas right now, you guys have, Texas has a vote coming up for, what is it, Proposition 5 or something like that, because you're to add more layers of accountability to the organization that handles penalizing your judges, because a lot of judges are kind of getting away with doing a lot of stuff, from drinking and driving to having sex in their chambers. And I mean, there's tons of stories of judges who have committed so much misconduct but then have been allowed to keep their positions. And my question is, when it comes to the voting aspect of things, like, how do we expect people to vote intelligently, knowledgeably, and honestly if the people that they're voting for are not revealing their entire characters and their entire behavior, and that the bodies that are supposed to be telling us what these guys are doing aren't revealing any of this? They're keeping it behind closed doors, and they're not, basically, they're not informing and making sure that there's a well-educated public who can vote for the right people.
You know, bro, in listening to you talk, I talked to John earlier this morning, and John gave me his rundown and what he ran through with some judges. And I want to say that and hold it, because the Rittenhouse judge and the judge in Tennessee, Ms. Davenport, that those two cases, to me, pop out for stand. And we all have our own things that we're going to bring. But I want to ask Billy why we got him, so that we all have at least a fundamental understanding the Facebook people, the people who may listen to this show later, and maybe some of the judges who I'm sure when they found out we're going to talk about judges, some of them are tuning in and some of them are listening. Billy, what is a judge's responsibility? What are they responsible for?
Judges, first of all, they do have a code of judicial conduct, at least in, I'm talking in fact, and they must, you know, abide by their canons, they call them, and things that they are that they should do based off integrity, being unbiased, those kind of things. But for the most part, the judge is the, I would say he's the referee of a hearing, of a proceeding. He's not there, he or she's not there to question a witness unless it's not particular questions aren't being asked in the interest of justice. So then they can question a witness. But for the most part, that's what your attorney's job is to do. And the job of the judge, furthermore, is to ensure that the rules of evidence is applied in accordance with whatever level of the system that we're in, whether it's federal or state rules of evidence. They're there to make sure that those things are being adhered to and there's no evidence that's not grounded or not proper correctly that the jury's going to be looking at and deliberate on. So that's pretty much the main thing. Of course, depending on what your case is, the judge also can determine the sentencing if you elect to have the judge determine your sentence. And that's a very important thing that I think we need to talk more about, these judges that are being given that authority to determine a person's guilt. And again, remember, judges, for the most part, are partisan. They're either Republican, Democrat, Independent. They answer to some party. So that's something that just to think about when you're a criminal defendant and your liberty is at stake. Do you want that judge or would you prefer a jury of your peers?
You know, Billy, I'm glad you mentioned that because, John, I know you're chopping at the bit, bro. I'm gonna get to you in between these two judges that I'm going to – but I want to introduce everybody to Judge Donald Scott Davenport. And she's a judge for Rutherford County Juvenile Court in Rutherford County, Tennessee. She was elected to the court in 2000 and reelected in 2006 and 2014. Her current term expires in 2022. She received the A.S. degree in religion from North Greenville College in 1972. She received the A.A. degree in law enforcement and a B.S. in criminal justice from Middle Tennessee State University in 1979. She continued on to receive her master's degree in criminal justice administration from the Middle Tennessee State University in 1980. In 1986, she received a JD degree from Nashville School of Law. She also worked part-time as Billy, and you said this word, and it stuck in my head. She also worked part-time as a referee for the Rutherford County Juvenile Court, now called a magistrate. In 1999, Judge Davenport became a full-time referee of the court or magistrate. The following year, she was elected as judge of the Rutherford County Juvenile Court. She has also taught as an adjunct professor at Middle Tennessee University since 1996. And let me see real quick. Let's meet her.
All right, well, in Tennessee, a judge under fire for illegally jailing black kids for watching a fight back in 2016. The alleged crime, listen to this, criminal responsibility of conduct of another. One of the problems, that's a fake law. News Nation's Gerald Harris at our Nashville station WKRN is live. So, Gerald, the judge just made up this law.
Yeah, Nicole, in 2016, lawmakers actually called for a federal investigation into the arrest and detainment of black elementary school students in Rutherford County. And now there's a renewed focus on the judge responsible for this jailing of those kids.
There has to be something done to everyone who was involved in this.
Donna Scott Davenport, the sole Rutherford County juvenile judge, is facing renewed scrutiny over a filter system, which allows jail staff to determine when a child is released.
It's my understanding that they created a law that wasn't even on the books in order to make that happen.
According to a report from WPLN and ProPublica, Judge Davenport instituted a policy that all children charged with crimes be processed at the detention center. In 2016, 11 elementary school children were detained and or locked up after allegedly witnessing a fight between a 5- and 6-year-old.
That is horrible abuse of power. And I can't imagine, I mean, we have the administrative office of the courts. I believe they should take action and investigate.
The alleged crime, criminal responsibility for conduct of another, a fake law.
You can't make up the law.
James McCarroll Jr. is the senior pastor of First Baptist Murfreesboro. His church held the first community meeting following the arrest in 2016. He says there cannot be two systems of justice.
We have a responsibility to all of our citizens, to give them a system that looks out for them, that allows them to not only have a constitutional right, but to have people who are assigned to carry out their constitutional right, who have hearts to really make sure that people are in the best state and space that their lives can have.
Multiple Rutherford County commissioners say because of pending litigation, they cannot comment. In 2014, 48% of children were jailed under Judge Davenport's watch. The statewide average at the time was 5%.
We are letting kids fall through the cracks in all different ways, and this is just one more way we have discovered where DCS has dropped the ball. And they need to be looking closely at these programs to make sure that they are following our laws.
And in a settled lawsuit in 2017, Rutherford County agreed to pay each of the 11 children nearly $400,000, Nicole.
All right. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Judge Donna Scott Davenport, who's currently still there. How does this happen? How does this go by? How does she keep getting reelected? And we can go down the prison, the school-to-prison pipeline. Get them in the books. Get them in the system. And this case, and I know some people are going to say, well, you know, that's 2016. Why is it relevant now? Because it's just coming out now. Because somebody had the guts to speak up. Just like the people we're finding out that are exonerated after 20 or 30 years and we just dismiss it. You know, I see you thinking, brother.
I mean, sadly, nothing about this surprises me. I mean, when the lady says that this is like another one of the aspects we have to watch out for, I mean, but set aside the fact that we're all up in arms in the fact that this woman invented a law to incarcerate children. Set aside the fact that it is completely legal to incarcerate children in this country as young as 7 or 8 years old. So that's another side problem there. Maybe we shouldn't forget, you know, the laws that you're making up. Maybe we shouldn't be putting kids in jail. Just a thought. Try it out for a little bit. See what happens. And secondly, this is also nothing new in terms of judge misconduct. There was a Reuters did a story in a survey or a study back in, I think it was last year, they released a story. And they identified and reviewed something like 1,500 cases between like 2008 and 2020 or 2019. And out of those cases, it was all judges that were accused of some form of misconduct, whether it was having sex in their courtroom, berating domestic violence victims, driving drunk. 9 out of every 10 of those judges was allowed to return to the bench. It's because there's no oversight for these guys, and the oversight that exists isn't enforced. And when you get into rural communities, when you get into communities like the ones we're talking about, it's even less so, because people get into a position and they just rotate through. And not to mention the fact that I'm pretty sure that judge, I can't remember, like that judge, she had to take a test like 6 times or 7 times before she got allowed in. Right there. at what point, when we're talking about these positions, when you're in a position of power to decide people's lives and futures, maybe there should be a cutoff. Okay, you didn't pass like three times. Sorry, you can't do it. You're not allowed. Like, maybe where's the cutoff? Why was she allowed to take a test six or seven times, and then they were still like, oh, okay, she finally did seven times the charm. Let's put her up on the bench in a respected position and have her decide people's lives. Why not? It comes from there's an idea of our criminal justice system. At one point, it is by design, and there is a purposeful intent behind a lot of this stuff. But at another point, and it's almost scarier, is the level of gross negligence, apathy, and incompetence that permeates the entire system and is just allowed to exist.
You know, but it goes back to a point that we've talked about, you know, a lot on the show, and we've talked about this point. When we talk about police reform, and that was a good name to put on it, everybody threw the police reform label on everything. And so everybody focused on the police. And we preached on this show, we have to talk about the prison system. We have to talk about the court system. We can't just focus on the police and think we're going to fix the problem. And so we look at the stalling of the George Floyd Act, Criminal Justice Act, Police Reform Justice Act. You know, it's stalled. For all intents and purposes, police reform right now is stalled and done while everybody searches for a leader or a voice in it. But everything you just brought up and what we're doing today on this show, the court system is as big a part of the problem as the policing system, because not only is the court system failing, it's fine you dismiss charges, but you're not going back after the people who set these people up, judges. You're not going back after them. So if there is no retribution, if I'm allowed to set someone up and the case is simply thrown out, but see, here's the kicker. When it's thrown out, it's still in your record that you were arrested for possession. It doesn't say Stan was suspected of putting the drugs in your car. You're suspect. Now you try to go get a job with that. So the courts are not coming back after the bad officers. That's why today we're talking about the court system. And we can look at Kyle Rittenhouse, or we can look at the children in Tennessee and some of the other cases that come up. But I think I'm going to bring John in here because I think John's story is extremely relevant because it brings it home to what that judge can or cannot do to you. And just when they go on a whim, based upon their personal experience, like they've been a criminal, but their personal experience or their feelings or their religion, hello, somebody, Christians don't run right now. When we get into the religion, where your religion overrides your common sense, and as Billy said, your canons, and you make a decision. John, come on, brother, tell your story if you would, please.
Yes, thank you. First of all, Stan, this is a great case of abuse. And Billy may differ with me a little bit, but I think judges have been getting away with tweaking the law forever. So, like, the judge know that he can push it as far as he can, and then the Supreme Court or appellate court may just sit back and back him, and then the law kind of gets changed a little bit. And they constantly do this. They constantly do this through trial, and the judge will sit there and say, well, based on my interpretation and case state versus such and such, the courts rule, but... you know, attorneys are sitting there, they arguing, the state is arguing, and you're reading the law, and it's crazy, like, becomes new law. Well, we ruled this way in this case, and now today there's a new way of looking at the case. It's crazy. And a lot of people fell victim. So I shared with Stan this morning that, to my surprise, the chief prosecutor in my district was the chief justice of the Supreme Court for the state. My case was at the appellate level. The Supreme Court took the case from the appellate court, saying that I had first-time impression issues that they felt that the appellate court couldn't address. Therefore, they brought it up to the Supreme Court to rule. I will say his name, Judge Callahan, who was the Supreme Court justice, and all this can be verified. He recused himself, and my case was heard by five justices. Two justices found no error, two found error. The fifth and final justice, Justice Palmer, found error, but he ruled that it was harmless error. So instead of me getting out of prison after 2 years, because I do have three justices, and my case was saying that the court erred because this one judge said that it was harmless, and he said that my attorney had the opportunity to cross-examine to remedy it, but he failed to do it. Rather than hold the judge responsible and accountable, he held my lawyer accountable. And then I turned around and still couldn't get justice on my lawyer. I forget the word. It's not malpractice, but this attorney Clark can help me out with this in a minute. But I stayed in prison as a result, and you can look this up, State versus Ruffin. And this is the unfairness when there's a judge, and the trial judge in the case, his name was Nigel. He was known for having some of the biggest trials in the state, and according to them, he never earned in his rulings. And he had a conversation with my attorney and said, I think I screwed up this time because I definitely pushed it. I pushed the envelope with Ruffin because I wanted him off the streets as much as the cops. And instead of them overruling him, but the sad part about it is, anybody else who could have came up and said, well, State versus Ruffin could have went home. Because clearly three judges ruled that I was correct in my argument. The only problem I had was argument that I made was that one judge said it was harmless. And this is the problem in America. You got these appellate courts, these Supreme Courts, circuit courts. Circuit courts is a little better than the state level, and then you got the federal courts of appeal out here. So it's appellate, supreme, circuit, and it's crazy, man, because a lot of these judges were once prosecutors in the same courtrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them was a prosecutor while the other one was a judge, and they both moved on up the ladder, and they're friends. They're friends. We don't stop to think about that there's a fraternity there. Izzy, man, I want you to take over, Izzy, because you're shaking your head. I know you got something to add to that, man.
Please. I mean, you're right, man. I mean, nobody talks about throughout law enforcement and the criminal justice system. I mean, number one, this is an industry. But number two, they're all hanging out together. They're all friends. They all eat at the same they all go to the lunch together. They all go to dinner together. They're all at the same parties. There's photos of all these people together. Look at the Supreme Court. Right now, the Supreme Court is up in arms saying, oh, no, there's no bias. We're all philosophical, and we're outside of any sort of partisanship. And then there's photos of them with senators and politicians, like, hanging out together. And we're so naive to think that that doesn't influence anything. Why are the Supreme Court judges screaming right now that they're like that there's no partisanship in the Supreme Court? Could it be because there's blatant partisanship in the Supreme Court? Could it be because there's blatant cronyism throughout the entire criminal justice system that nobody wants to acknowledge? I mean, think about this. So, like, you were talking about exonerations. Sam was talking about exonerations. One-third of every wrongful conviction, a third of exonerations, are no crime convictions. There was no crime. It didn't happen, but the person still got convicted and sent to jail. Why did that happen? The judge is a part of that. How do you send someone to prison for a crime that never occurred? And that's a third of exonerations. That's an insane statistic, that a third of the people who have been exonerated were in prison for a crime that not only did they not commit, it was a crime that never occurred.
You know, I'm watching the Facebook comments because, the Facebook, they get on there host another show. And Mike Denham says, that's because people think the system is designed to work right. It's not. The system is designed to work rich, and everybody sit down for this one, here it comes, and white.
Yeah.
Not
FYI, yeah. Rich and white is right.
Yeah, and you know what? And so before people go to their racial listening ears, oh, here he goes, talking about, no. Poor and white, middle class and white are crucified and thrown into the altar to satisfy the whims of whoever. The same, if not, well, not the same rate. But if you're poor and white and you're still running around thinking this system ain't broke because they haven't messed with you yet, get in that system. If you're middle class and white, you've got 2.5 kids in the picket fence unless they've updated the standards. That was the American. I never understood 2.5 kids. Is that like you're two kids and you adopt one? But if you think that, oh, this system is great, I oftentimes hear we have the greatest system in the world. We're a hell of a lot better than a lot of places. I will grant that. But let's go back and look at when this system was put in place. Now, for me, I have to look at that and I have to examine that because it was not put in place for people who look like me because I did not have rights. It wasn't put into play for people who last name is Rodriguez. You damn sure weren't part of the calculus of the system. The system was put in place to protect a particular class. And that is what is permeated to this day because we don't go back and view it. When we go back and look at the prisons, proportionally you have blacks, Hispanics, maybe a few Asians here and there, and a bunch of poor-ass white folks. They had no problem throwing all them in jail. If you're black, you're going. But I saw a video last night, and I'm going to say this. It's going to draw some outrage for some folks, and that's okay. I can take it. When I talk about black folks, I have to carve out a group and sit them aside. The elite black people, the elite ones. We got some black folks who have enough money and contacts. They're just as untouchable as these rich white folks. But we don't ever call them out. So let's get their ass today, too, while we're going after these judges. Let's go there, too, because you have some folks who have so much money and power, prestige, and hobnob, and whatever the case. They'll come after Stan or Izzy or Billy or John or Joe, but they ain't going after them. These are the same voices to black folks who want to rebuild the system and we want to reform the system. Sometimes let's stop looking at who's in the fight and let's start asking ourselves, who is it and why? Go ahead, John.
Yeah, during my research on appeal, I would be shepherdizing cases and stuff like they got these books that shepherdized books. You find an issue and it gives you all this stuff on the issue. And the one thing that really intrigued me was how a judge, an appellate judge, would rule on a case. Not saying that people don't change their minds, but you'll find that in some cases they rule differently.
Mm-hmm.
Just a matter of months ago. Where is the people that is watching over them? How is it that you can rule this way, and then 3 months later the rule is in an opposite way? Because there's no one over them.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one keeping scores. To hey, you know, if mm-hmm. this judge is ruled, so why is this guy still in jail? Now this guy has to stay in jail because this appellate court ruled in two different ways in two different cases.
You know, John. Right now, if we look in communities. Middle-class people, I don't care what color they are, they're struggling to make it. and dealing with COVID and dealing with everything. When I talk about the elites, there's no racial boundaries, black, white, whatever. You got the folks who's intermediate. And I understand you don't have to worry about things other people do, and that's fine. But when I go back to those who fashion themselves as community leaders, those who we see who look like us, John, who are on every major talk show and news agency across the country, and they talk about everything but the issues. We're suffering because there is no effective leadership with the cojones, I speak a little Spanish, to call out. Some of these people with multi-million-dollar contracts and everybody loves them and they've got this organization there on MSNBC or whatever. It's nice that you're there after somebody's child got shot. It's great that you're there after somebody's done 30 years in prison. But what have you done to stop it from going on? So we have to educate ourselves. And then these people who call themselves leaders, preachers, city council people, the local mechanic, I don't care who they are, so they can disseminate and bring the information back, but hold them accountable. We got council people across this country, black or white or Asian or Hispanic, I don't give a damn what race they are, that ain't worth a quarter. They're glad to be on the council. Now people say, how do we get the city councils? We got the city councils because they write the city ordinance. The city ordinance is a traffic violation, the loitering violation, the thing that introduces our young people in reference to, you know, Ms. Donovan, Judge Donovan. These are the little things that introduce our young people into the system. And then once we get them in the system, we got them. Because there's no oversight. Someone posted on the Facebook, there's no judicial oversight whatsoever. Some of these judges, not all, there's some good judges out there. There's a hell of a lot of good judges out there. I think it's like police officers. There's more good ones than bad ones. But I have to go back to the judges and say to you what I say to police officers on this show every time. If you call this show and you say, it's a few bad apples, I'm going to say bullshit, the bushel's rotten. The apple cart is rotten. It doesn't mean the orchard's bad. It means we got some pruning to do. So when you tell me that, you know, it's not all judges, I know it's not all judges, but I'm going to say, well, where are the so-called good ones? If they're there, if there is a such thing that is just and operates under the canons that Billy described, why are these judges not calling out the bullshit judges, just like I expect? The good officers, if you want to be the good officer, you call out the bad officer. If you're not willing to do that, you're as bad as those who are doing whatever they're doing. You know, if I see you shaking your head, bro.
I mean, it's all about, when it comes to the whole concept of, I mean, essentially whistleblowing and reporting on misconduct, it should be inherent to the job, but I think when we're having that conversation, I've said this before, we can't discount the lack of protections that are in place for a lot of these people to come forward and report on this stuff. So if we want more people to come forward, we have to make sure that they're going to be protected to come forward. And right now, across the country, there's no consistent protections for people to come forward. They can lose their jobs. They can be, you know, it can be as extreme as having their life threatened. And we always discount that when we talk about being the hero and coming forward. It's very easy to tell someone else, why haven't you come forward? Just like it's easier to get on the person who's doing the job that you have no interest in fucking doing yourself. It's very easy to do that. So I think, one, I agree with you that we need to have – these people need to come out and report this, but we can't discount the fact that a part of the reason that they're not is because of a culture of retaliation and a lack of systemic protections against
people. There we go. And if we go deeper, let's look forensically at these – we're talking about these entities, whether it's judges, police officers, attorneys. Let's just get to what is our purpose? To tell the what? Truth. Stan's job at Waco PD was never to win the case. I never walked into a courtroom to win a case. That was not my job. My job was to go there and testify to what Stan did. And if that attorney asked me, if the defendant's attorney said, do you know my client? Yes. How long have you known him? Since he was in fourth grade. Did he? If he asked me questions, was he nice to you? Yeah, he's always nice to me. I have to answer honestly. I can't look over and say, well, I don't want to answer that because it's going to favor him. And that's bullshit. You go in and you testify to that which is true, and you walk away from this job. And maybe judges will learn this from the people who send them cases. You walk away from this job, and you say, did everybody like me? No. Was everybody happy with my testimony? No. But was I truthful? Was I able to walk away and say, I testified to the facts, not to the conviction? That is when you get to walk away from whatever, whether you're a judge or a cop or whatever, you get to walk away and sleep at night and become a human once again, not part of the system that locks people up, not somebody who now has to fight the very system you worked for because you choose to speak up for those who are being run over by this very system, and the longer you stay in police work, you start seeing these things. What's happening from this system? I'm not saying you weren't justified in arresting Joe or John or Jim, but what came of it? And you got to live with that. And that's deep. And that's for the officers, the judges, the attorneys that are listening. You know, you're affecting people's lives. Your words matter. When you type these words on paper, John will attest to it. They matter. When you sit in that courtroom, if you're more interested in winning than being truthful, you're rotten. If you're a judge and you're more interested in votes and likes and clicks that come in the form of political donations, let's just be honest about it. You're rotten.
Stan, let me ask you a question.
Come on, John.
while in prison, I used to clean the officer's mess hall. And I seen something that was so despicable. An officer was writing a disciplinary report, and he handed over to a veteran officer. He said, oh, no, that's not going to stick. He's going to beat this. And he told them what to write. He wrote it again, and then him and another veteran officer looked over it. And then finally, one of the veteran officers wrote on a piece of scrap paper the way to write it up to get the, we call it a conviction in prison. Did that happen during your time as a police officer? Do that happen as a police officer? Do they come and help other officers write their report so that it may help the conviction? That's what I want to know.
You know, I can say from my experience, I had officers I supervised when they were under FPL. I was never a sergeant. I never sought a promotion. I didn't want to be promoted. I loved midnights. I loved being out there with the people. But when you're training, you're reading over because they don't know how to take. I mean, they're seeing a traumatic event that they don't know how to put on paper. So you're not telling them what to say. But you do, and I said this on and I posted an interview I did with someone for a police channel. There's a term that we're taught. It's hammered into you in the academy, and it is hammered. It's when you get your weekly academy test, this is, most of them are circle, you know, multiple choice. But this one has a line where you actually have to write it out, or at least you used to. I was in fear of my life. You all, as civilians, y'all don't know how big a catch-all, because it becomes a blanket justification of everything you did there physically, whether it's punching a woman, whether it's wrestling with somebody, whether it was shooting somebody, using mace, any physical work. When you invoke that phrase, which you are conditioned to put in, and you look at the reports. And yes, you know, we do look at if for instance, you arrested a guy for burglary, and I'm looking at your report, I know the elements of the offense of burglary, and the elements are A, B, C, D, E. I got to be able to prove to have burglary. I'm there with the kid. He's got a burglary. But he doesn't know how to go back and look at the elements. Because remember, we're teaching them in real time now. So that part of it is, I don't think it's suspect when I'm saying, okay, what are the elements of the offense of burglary? What do you have to prove? A, B, C, D, E. Okay. Now look back in your mind of what you experienced out there. I want you to fill in A, B, C, D, and E. You're training them and helping them. And I think, and I understand what you're saying, what happened in that situation was absolutely wrong. They rewrote the incident for that person, as opposed to me training a new officer and teaching him or her to be exact, to be concise, to be defined. Look at your elements. Your report should be not your emotions. The elements of the office. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. That's it. That's all you need.
But Stan, it's even, let's look at the scenario you just gave, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the elements are not there.
You don't have an office.
And using Izzy language, the crime wasn't there.
No, you got a bad arrest.
Maybe it was a lesser crime. Maybe it was just the cop only has a trespassing
mm-hmm.
case, and the burglary was never actually a crime. The elements don't. If the elements mm-hmm. are not there, how do you make them all of a sudden appear?
You don't. This is what happens with that. I'll go from my experience. I'm not going to say this is everywhere. This is what happens, and I've seen it with some not veterans, but some tenured officers. In departments, they'll make the arrest, they'll send what we call a DA package, which usually consists of the officer's report, the list of the evidence, and a criminal history on the person arrested, all the witnesses, whatever. It's called a DA package, district attorney package. It gets sent to the district attorney's office where they screen that case. The district attorney's office may send you back in a month. You may get a case disposition form that says, case non-prosecutable. In other words, just what you said, you did not prove those offenses. But herein lies the problem with that. Citizens don't know how, and what I just said right here, a lot of them don't know. Oh, shit, I didn't know that. I just knew I got off. But you don't know why you got off. See, why didn't you go back now? See, so this is where, and it's not the citizen's fault, it's the system's fault. If we want to be transparent, do what we do on this show every Saturday. Open up the floodgates and say, when that officer, when Stan comes to work and in my box, there lies a case disposition form that says case not prosecutable. I mean, I did not prove the elements of that offense by which I arrested that person. Or dismissed. Here's one we get dismissed in the interest of justice. Usually that one comes about when you're going after somebody's kid who's got money and influence and power, did some shit, and it's going to be embarrassing, it's dismissed in the interest of justice. John, I'm glad you brought that because it brought out a lot that people would know. So I would say if you get a notice that says your charges have been dropped, while you popping bottles, celebrating, why don't you go back and ask why? Because this system.
Please go to Izzy, because Izzy got a serious smirk on his
face. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Izzy. Come on, bro.
I don't know what the smirk is for, Izzy.
I mean, just listening to the system as Stan described it, like, I hope we all can see how right that situation is for just gross misconduct. Gross misconduct, gross corruption, and minimal oversight. Everything he just described was so confusing. But let's also take a point now and remember that the officer that's dealing with that situation has, if we're lucky, 5 months and 29 days more of training than the regular people listening to this or you and me, John. And if we're lucky, a college education. And if we're lucky, the type of common sense that we have on here. That's all if we're lucky. I'll tell you right now, in my experience, we're not lucky, and the person in that situation is undereducated, underexperienced, undertrained and underqualified for the job, much less the situation that Stan just described. And if we're lucky, that officer is being guided by Stan and not a more common type of training officer or FTO who is just telling him how to cut corners and get the report out and get the job done and do what he has to do to get out of the way and keep moving on. Because let's just, in my experience, talking, and all I do is talk to people, there is doctoring and falsifying of reports happening around the country every day, all the time, right now, as we're speaking. They do it either to get someone into jail or they do it to protect their own asses. And why? Because they can, because the situation is so convoluted and systemically disorganized, almost purposefully, to allow them windows and opportunities to do all of this stuff. And it just makes me laugh to just hear someone like Stan, who has experience, describe just in a common voice how this system is supposed to go down. Well, this is supposed to happen, and then maybe you do this, and then maybe this happens, and then maybe we get to this, and then this should happen. And it's just so almost by design disorganized.
Now, let's tie all this back into the topic with the judges. Now, this same officer gets up here and testifies. He's constantly asking to read his notes because it's not his testimony. And a lot of these judges see that this officer is testifying differently from his police report, and they allow them this leeway when they know that this officer is lying.
Let me do this, John.
Let's tie all these things.
Yeah, let's
do this. You know that they're lying.
Yeah,
you also have to account for, remember that like incompetence factor. That exists in judges, too. There are judges out there that are making. They're not reading. They're not reading anything. They're not studying anything. They're just making decisions. And they lean, and they're biased. And they lean towards the officers. They lean towards the prosecutors. And they're not reading anything. There are stories up the wazoo of judges ignoring scientific evidence, literal evidence, testimonies, research, reports,
facts,
and just making decisions.
Facts, you know.
Facts.
Yeah. Let's do this real quick, John. Let's bring Billy in, because as a defense attorney, I think Billy can really bring something in here. And I want to ask, you know, no names and specifics, but when you get an officer testifying and you're hearing this officer testify, but you're looking at his report, and you're going, what I'm hearing doesn't match what I'm reading, and you know, it becomes apparent. How frustrating is it for you as a defense attorney when you know something is not right and a ruling goes against you?
Yeah, Stan, you're right. When you know in your heart, you know what you see and what you hear from a previous either report or a oral deposition, and you're hearing something completely different, on the stand, so the role of the attorney at that point, and I think John kind of was looking for the word ineffective assistance of counsel. That would be a ground for that from the attorney standpoint. He's not calling that out and just, you know, I hate the curse of being an asshole about it. No, we're not going to get off this topic. You said this. Is this not what your statement says? Remember, you were under oath during the deposition. You got to keep letting them know that, hey, what you said during the deposition is the same as saying it right here on the stand. So either you're lying then or you're lying now. But the bottom line is you're a liar. And then you got to call them out. You got to, in front of the jury, let the jury members know that, hey, this guy is a liar. He's lying to you either then or now. So, you know, and it's so sad if a ruling goes in favor of, you know, a side based on a lie.
You know, Billy,
that's the most frustrating thing.
Let me ask you this, because I think I'm going to take your frustrating level a little higher with this question. You know, we as a police officer, I've worked a lot of bad calls, fatalities, child molestation. You work all that. You know, kids I've known have been killed, and you live with all that. Those moments never go away. And we hear about us all the time, because you defense attorneys are the bad guys. That's the way the system wants. It's not fair. You're the bad guy. let me ask you this. Without giving any specifics, I want to tap into Billy Clark for a minute, Attorney Billy Clark. How did you feel, if you ever had that case, and I'm pretty sure you have, where you knew your client was innocent, you proved your client was innocent, and it was overboard. I mean, just they're going to prison, and nothing you can do, and you look them in the face, knowing that this very system, for the sake of God, there go out. I could have been here. Finding moment in your defense attorney career where it became real to you that we want facts and we want truth. That's what court stands for. But I proved all that. But I now have to go back into a room, a cell. You don't actually go in a room. You're going into a cell with your now handcuffed client. It's got to spend God knows how many years in jail when you know that officer on that stand was not truthful. You know they weren't. How do you reconcile that with yourself and go home and keep your sanity?
I think, Stan, that's part of what is one of the most difficult things that you can do. Be surrounded by as an attorney when you know in your heart, you know with the fact that this person has gotten on the stand and told a lie. Mm-hmm. And you've called it out systematically with empirical evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And even circumstantial evidence. You mm-hmm. called it out, and it still results in your client mm-hmm. getting convicted on that. That's where, as an attorney, you have to you have to separate yourself as far as what am I in this job to do?
Mm-hmm.
What's my overall purpose of being an attorney? Is it to fight for justice or is it to make money?
Mm-hmm.
Is it to go the extra mile and now engage with these DAs, these people that can overturn things or get things or open the door to get things overturned and work with even your state reps, your congressmen, be an advocate for change. And the way our system is, if you don't elect the people that have integrity, that's going to be willing to have an open eye and be unbiased, then you're gonna be surrounded with people getting convicted. And I hate to say this, there are people in jail right now, lots of people that didn't do anything. There's people on death row right today that didn't, they're facing, they're waiting on the day to get that deal.
You know, Billy, go ahead, brother, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, to me, that's the biggest deal. I grew up with my dad. He spent a lot of time in Huntsville prison for petty crimes, petty shoplifting, little things like that, doing long stretches of time, brother. And then, for things right now that you probably get a slap on the wrist, but he's been 10, 15, 12 years in Huntsville.
You know, Billy, when
it just goes into, you know, what are you doing it for? And the reason why, you know, I feel like the reason why I became an attorney, I didn't become an attorney to make money. Shit, I worked in the government for 22 years in the military. You don't join the military and serve that long to become a billionaire. You just don't.
Yeah.
You do it because you care for our country, and that was one of the reasons why I decided to go to law school, is because I've seen so many people in our community, in McLennan County, in Waco, where I'm from, that have gone to jail for long stretches because of our judicial system, not necessarily because of the police officer, but
there you
because
go.
Of our system. Our system is broken. And yeah. One of my models in my campaign is the only way to change a system is to change the system. And if you think about that, we have to change the entire system. Because right now we have a broken system that's going to constantly result in people that don't have the money, that don't have access to quality defense. They're going to do long stretches of time for things that they likely didn't do.
You know, Billy, I agree with everything you just said, but I will submit this. The system is working exactly like they designed it opposite of our perspective of it. We're taught in civics class. They don't even teach civics anymore. That's probably why so many folks are ignorant. But, you know, you understood the system and how it was designed to work. The system has moved in with the introduction of for-profit prisons, and convictions became relevant. So transfer that down first to officers who have to produce statistics. So now we get people in the system. District attorneys who need convictions in order to get reelected. Judges who need harsh sentences to seem harsh on crime to get reelected. Let me introduce this guy. From 1971 to 1972, this guy was assistant district attorney of Kenosha County. In 1972 to 77, he was district attorney of Kenosha County. 77 to 83, he was an attorney in private practice. But in 1983 until present, he's a judge at the Kenosha County Circuit Court. And on February 11, 2021, Judge Schroeder denied two requests by prosecutors to issue an arrest warrant and raise the bail on Kyle Rittenhouse. Now, this is what he said. Never mind. No one knew where Kyle Rittenhouse was. He had absconded from justice for all we knew. Remember that period we were all looking for, where's Kyle Rittenhouse? He said, quote, most people out on bond, we don't know where they are. To issue a warrant now for a defendant who has appeared at every hearing that will be breaking the law. And I'm not going to do it. And what I'm going to do real quick, let's hear from him.
And a major development in the case of Kyle Rittenhouse. He is the 17-year-old, accused of shooting three people in Kenosha, Wisconsin during a protest against police brutality. Prosecutors will not be allowed to use the term victim to describe the three men shot by Rittenhouse. A judge ruled that lawyers can, however, refer to the three men as rioters, looters, or arsonists, but only if Rittenhouse's lawyers have evidence to support those claims. Rittenhouse was involved in multiple confrontations with protesters and is accused of opening fire during two separate scuffles, killing two men and injuring a third. Here to help us understand all of this is NBC News legal analyst Glenn Kirshner. Glenn, first I'd like to play this exchange between the judge and the prosecution. Take a listen to this.
The word victim is a loaded, loaded word. And I think alleged victim is a cousin to it.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I think it's the exact same issue. The terms that I'm identifying here, such as rioters, looters, arsonists, are as loaded, if not more loaded, than the term victim, Your Honor.
So, Glenn, for a lot of us without legal degrees, victims sounds only about as charged as rioters and looters.
We'll go ahead and stop that there. But the three people concerned, and then I'll open this up. Anthony Hubert, who was killed, was 26 years old, and he was from the Silver Lake community of Kenosha County. Joseph Rosenbaum was killed. He's a 36-year-old father, lived in Kenosha. He originally came from Texas and is survived by his fiancée and 2-year-old daughter. This gentleman was shot in the arm and currently has a lawsuit pending against the Sheriff's Department, ironically. Gage, and I'm going to butcher this last name, Grosskreutz, Grosskreutz, 26, was shot in the arm, a resident of West Allis, Wisconsin. He was at a protest with the social justice group People's Revolutionary Movement. Now, whether Kyle Rittenhouse, I don't want to get into the whole city of having a gun there. We all have our opinions of that, as do the listeners. People, when the attorneys are told, and Billy, I really want to hear from you, if you were given this charge, how do you receive it? You cannot call this person a victim. If they're not allowed to be victims, you almost don't have a crime, because the old adage is you don't have a crime without what? A victim. And so when I heard that, I was like, well, they're just cutting the knees out from under the prosecution. What,
yeah,
understand. I think, I mean, we have to call it what it is. We have victims. We have suspects. We have complainants. We need to stop with this trying to change the narrative and trying to be politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
A victim is a victim for a reason. Even if you look at, you know, I'm reviewing stuff right now, looking at some DA packs, and all over it says victim. Victim or complaint. So why can't we say it in the court where it matters, where people need to know the impact what happened. So I think by trying to be politically correct, we're swaying the pendulum of the justice system and skewing it to one way. And I think that right there in itself is when we talk about criminal justice reform, it's these little things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the little things are the things that will get you put in jail for 60 years for something you probably didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
It's the little things, not the big in-your-face things. It's the little bitty things. And those are the things that we need to be mindful of when we go to elect our leaders. We need to know their history, what their background is. You know, any kind of, like we do with any other job of, let's say you're going to be a banker or an accountant, you have to have some kind of personal integrity, or else you're not going to get the job. And we shouldn't have judges, and I'm holding myself as a future judge accountable as well. I shouldn't be able to get a job if I can't even do my own job anymore. Mm-hmm. Why should I be allowed to seek a higher job that's going to basically decide the fate of people? It's not right, man. And those are the things that we need to be mindful of and be critical of in our system. And again, like you said, I agree with you. We are, for the most part, working within the system, but the system's still broken.
Mm-hmm.
The system says we're innocent until proven guilty, right?
Mm-hmm.
Innocent.
Innocent
means I can keep my passport. I can do whatever I need. I am innocent until the state proves every single element of the crime, not just one or two,
mm-hmm.
but every element.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. When it's based on a popularity contest or how a person looks contest. If he looks a certain way, he's likely guilty, so I'm going to give him a higher bond. Or I'm going to put these conditions on his liberty unnecessarily. And then he's going to, you know, if somebody violates it, now they're in trouble for that. So you see what I mean? It's a cycle that we just can't get out. It's like being in a washing machine that's constantly on spin cycle.
You know, Billy,
you can't get a rinse, but you're constantly on spin cycle. That's where we are.
I absolutely see it. I was listening to you, and I'm looking at the Zoom, of course, and I'm looking at a little clock I got in the background. It's got an arm moving back and forth, left and right. And I'm looking at the opinions, and I'm looking at this clock, and I'm just like, it's moving like the system. You know, on one hand, we say that a good guy with a gun can stop a bad guy with a gun. Well, how about a good guy with a skateboard? How about a good guy that has nothing but his hands that says, this guy just shot and killed somebody up the street. I'm going to intervene. Two people are dead. One is recovering. And all of a sudden, the same people who would advocate for the good guy with the gun, never mind the fact, I mean, I don't even want to go down the entire rabbit hole of the, if people can Google it, the conversations he had with the officers who were in the staging area, who had no problem with this radical group being there. I'm not going to get into a 17-year-old walking around with an AR-15 crossing state lines. I don't even want to go there. We can if we have to. But I look at the Kyle Rittenhouse case and the judge's decision, and I can only do it from the lens I've been gifted with. And I can tell you, if Kyle's first name was Kalia, we wouldn't be having this discussion. If Kyle Rittenhouse, if this would have happened in New York City, and let's just flip the color of his skin, this is, and I'm sorry, I'm doing this case, I'm looking at it, and I've watched it. The white privilege argument is coming out in this. It came out before it even got to the judge. All these people, bless Kyle Rittenhouse, carrying a gun down the street, and he's going off against these Black Lives Matter protesters. And great guy. He's flashing signals to the cops. The police have the police let this armed individual who's being chased by a mob. Mobs chase people on purpose. They let him walk right through their armored personnel vehicles to go home to wherever and never stopped him. I can't with this one. I just really can't. John,
Malcolm said many years ago that they would have the criminal looking like the victim and the victim looking like the criminal. So to call these people looters and so and certain other little names that the judge came up with is to make the victim now the criminal. And the criminal, he's being treated as a victim. Or we can't call him certain names, or we can't call people certain names. The system is crazy. And my thing is, I don't only look at the judge in this matter. I look at the prosecutor. The judge rules, and Billy, you know this being true. And one thing that you said to me outset was, and you'll find it in many of the Supreme Court rulings, is that a judge is a referee, right? So if a judge rules improperly in a case, a prosecutor, even before the trial phase, can appeal any ruling by a judge. What has the prosecutor done in steps to cure this situation? Because if the prosecutor hasn't moved for to appeal the judge's ruling, then he's just as guilty as the judge, or maybe he's down with the judge. That's my opinion.
And you know what, John? And that's relevant because if we look at the dynamics around this Kyle Rittenhouse trial, they want to make it black and white, black and white, black and white. And let's look at the facts. Yes, it was a Black Lives Matter rally. But the two people that are dead and the individual who was shot were white, by a white guy. This has nothing to do with race from the perspective of the victims. And I'm going to call them victims because the judge's opinion don't mean shit to me. I'll call them victims because they were victims. I worked murders. Where I get there and I don't know what the hell happened. I know I got a dead guy in a car and nobody around. So in my report, that dead guy with a bullet in their head that may have went through and went through the dashboard, they are called victim. And whoever we arrest them, whatever we arrest them for, when I get into court and I testify, they are victim. They're the dead person. They're the result of the action. And with Kyle Rittenhouse, there's so much semantics behind it. This kid got away with stuff none of us on the screen could have done. Not near one of us on the screen could have gotten away with one tenth. You know, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole, but we can Google Marissa Alexander in Florida. Look at how much time Marissa Alexander did for shooting at her ex-husband and her house with a protection order in place. Ironically, the same prosecutor who failed to convict George Zimmerman for killing Trayvon Martin, same courtroom, same county, got a conviction on Marissa Alexander.
That's interesting because Florida has stand your ground, which is what the, like, which I think is what Zimmerman used, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's interesting that she couldn't use that, or he wasn't successful in utilizing that, because that's one of the few instances that a civilian does get to experience the carte blanche that you were talking about before. And there's a case, and like you said, it does connect a little bit to that privilege aspect, because in Texas right now there's another stand your ground case that's coming in where a guy shot a Muslim man who had used his driveway to turn around in the neighborhood because he was lost, and the guy pulled into his driveway, and the owner of the house grabbed his gun, walked outside, and shot the guy and killed him. and called the police and was like, I just killed somebody. And now he's using stand your ground to defend himself, which is a viable defense in that state based on that situation. And he said, he lied and said that, oh, yeah, he pointed a gun at me. There was no gun found on the scene, none whatsoever.
But
that's still going, but he still can use that to defense.
Sure, but we go back, and I got to go to this. I'm glad you brought that up. This is not a myth. I can tell you I've been black a long time. I'm sure Billy will give his experience. John will weigh in. Izzy, you'll have yours. You know, there is a myth in this country, and I'm reminded of the movie Animal Farm, when the animals finally took over the house. They took over the farmer's house, kicked the farmer and his wife out. The pigs walked onto the front porch of the property, and I'm not using that as a metaphor. In the book, it's actually the pigs who were the spokespeople. And it reminds me so much of the American criminal justice system today when I go back, and we had to read that book in fifth grade. I mean, I don't even think they read books anymore. They just kind of leap through articles. But the pigs proclaim all animals are created equal, but some are more equal than others. How true is that today? I mean, I look at, and I know, I'm 6'4". I deal with, I'm not as dark as John, and sometimes that's a curse because people are trying to figure out what the hell I am. They spend more time figuring out what I am than who I am. We're asking, is he Arab? Is he Puerto Rican? Is he black? Is he Mexican? Is he? And so I fall into so many dynamics to be blamed, I become convenient. Oh, John, you got that thing on your head and a beard. Oh, you're camouflage? Oh, he's a radical. Oh, Rodriguez. Oh, where's your papers, Mr. Rodriguez? Are you here legally? You know, you Mexicans and Puerto Ricans, you're all the same. This is the ignorance of America. So when people talk to me about the justice system, I've been 25 years in and watching and spoke up against what I thought was wrong. But I think a lot of people are standing on the outside doing it from their ivory tower in some aspects, from their privilege in some aspects, and they're failing to look at the people who are being ground up by a system that is designed. When we got rid of slavery, we got to have free labor somewhere. Hello, Georgia. You got slave farms here that are funded by the prison system. The inmates need snacks. They're going to go out there and work. They're picking potatoes and tomatoes or whatever else. And it's not just in the South. In the North, you have manufacturing. There is money in this. And I can't remember the case. Izzy, it might come to your mind. The Pennsylvania judge that was sending all them people to prison, juveniles, he was sending all of them in, and it came back and bit him. I'm going to find it. I'm going to post it. But it came back and bit him. It's about 2 or 3 years ago. And he was getting a kickback for sending these people into a specific detention center. There is money in this. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not Lady Liberty holding the scales, and it's even, and you come on your merits. That's bullshit. This is about money. John, people made money off John's ass when John was in jail making no money. It's just like schools. You're paid by the asses in the seats at the desk. And FTC brings no money. Why do you think we have laws such as truant, tardiness, lateness? Why? We're losing money. Floor is open.
I mean, When you look at the paradoxical enforcement of the justice system and how it does target certain people, I mean, think about the Derek Chauvin got 22.5 years for murdering someone on camera. You know, like, you saw it, we all saw it. He got 22.5 years. Meanwhile, there are thousands of black individuals, people of color, that are serving long sentences for weed possession. Mm-hmm. There's a guy named Alan Russell in Mississippi who just had his appeal. He got sentenced to life in prison for 44 grams of marijuana. and he just had his appeal denied.
Let me go real quick to a caller, 314 area code 4600. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Stan. Haven't heard from you on Fridays in a while when we used to meet. But
yeah,
look,
I've been busy the last couple of weeks. How you been, brother?
I've been doing fine. And I'm going to say this. If I was on the jury with for Kyle Rittenhouse, I would find him not guilty. What he done was defense. And you're absolutely right. One of the culprits in this country is the news media. I was listening to a Chicago station, the Black News Network, and they explicit how they use the word blacks and white to describe people in order to raise up the hype. Even if it was an undertaker, they would say the white undertaker dropped the black corpse as it was putting it in the coffin in order to bring up that type of hype. And, you know, to go to show you how diverse we are with some of these things, you just had that shooter down, a young kid down there in Texas at school, who premeditated, shot four people. Well, he gets in custody. He gets pennies for a bail, $75,000. And when he goes home, they throw a big party for him. Nobody's complaining about that like they did with Daylon Roof.
Good point.
And you know, with Kyle, in your picture here, you show a black man in white pants. Well, when Kyle was laying, fell down flat on his face, this man runs up and tries to stomp him. When Kyle rolled over and the man was running from him with his back to Kyle, Kyle didn't shoot him because he was no longer a threat. Whoever trained Kyle, I take my hat off to him. If he was my son, I'd be proud of him. Thank you very much.
Hey, Stan.
Whoa. Come on, John.
I got one question for him, Stan. How would he find someone innocent without hearing any evidence?
You still there, Bianchi?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, no, John was asking you a question, brother.
What did he ask?
How do you find someone innocent or guilty without hearing the evidence?
I said from what I saw and what I've read.
Right. Okay.
But you know what? But that's the beauty of the show. I don't want people just to call up here because they agree with us. And I'm going to give Bianchi some credit. He and I don't see eye to eye on a whole lot, but he takes the time to talk. And I have learned, you know, I'm not going to ostracize him or beat him up because he differs with me, because I can't do that. And then invite people with differing opinions to be here. So we can be opposed in some things, but I got to give him credit, and I'm going to give him his respect that he calls any ways in, and he's not disrupting when he does it. And brother, that's for me to you, and I had to say that, and I wanted to say that on here where everybody can hear it, because I know there's times I'll cut you off because I didn't agree with you, and that's my personal feelings, but that's not right for the show. So I'm going to say that to you while you're right here.
Stan, I'm glad you said what you said, because I've actually spoken to you with regards to this. There's a lot of people who, during voir dire, and I learned this firsthand, who have these preconceived notions that since you're arrested, you have to be guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And I Billy Clark probably could best testify to this. I sat there on trial and had a prospective juror say that, sitting there looking at me, that, and the attorney said to him, well, you haven't heard no evidence. And the person said, yeah, well, he's locked up. And the judge even said, well, if I was to rule and tell you that you're not supposed to look at him one way or the other, he's entitled to a fair trial, he's innocent until proven guilty, All that stuff went out the window, Stan.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of this system. Billy called it broken. You and Izzy saying it works the way that it's supposed to work. This is part of this terrible system that we have. And Billy Clark probably seeing incidents of what I'm describing here. People come in here and have this notion, oh, well, if he's in jail clothing or he's in cuffs, he has to be guilty, and haven't heard a bit of evidence. Billy?
You know, right on, John. I mean, you know, that should have been a definite mistrial right when that juror made that statement, because they're telling you right up they're not going to be able to look at the evidence on an unbiased way. So they're telling you right now that they're looking to make you guilty, whether you're guilty or not. It doesn't matter in their eyes. And that's part of, you know, the jury selection process, making sure you get those people off the panel. But the problem is you only got a certain amount of strikes. I mean,
mm-hmm.
for the most part. So now you're looking at, okay, you may strike off three of them, but there's still going to be one or two on there that makes the cut. And remember, all it takes is one. And you're doomed. So, yeah. Walking in defendant, I don't believe should be. There's got to be a good reason for them to be shackled in prison clothes
mm-hmm.
at trial. There's got to be a really good reason for that. Absent that, they should be in a suit, you know, proper court attire, so that the jury's not looking at them in one way or the other. And that's, unfortunately, that happens.
Hey Billy, I'm gonna propose a question before I go to this 404 area code, Big Travis. I see you, brother. I'm gonna come to you, but I'm gonna ask a question. I think it's just getting down to the root of it. Let's just with all the we covered a lot today, but as the teacher always said, everybody wanted to know. Okay, you taught us everything. When is the test? Here comes the test question. The American justice system concerned with justice or personal safety based upon your perception of who is a threat and who is safe? Because if we look at the exonerations, we're locking up a hell of a lot of innocent people, but we never seem to go back and lock up the people who put them in jail. So when we talk about justice, what is American justice? Is it truly the facts, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God, we all raise our hand, we all say it, we've all done it, we've all testified. Is that enough? Or is there still something missing? Before we get to that answer, let me go to the 404 area code 2002. Good morning, Big Travis. What's up, bro?
What's going on, Stan? How's everybody doing today?
Oh, we kicking it, bro. You know we lighting it up over here.
I know you lighting it up. I got just a quick statement, but I wanted to add to what you guys are saying about this whole situation with these courts. This is that war on crime I've been talking about for years, and nothing's fair in war. Of course, they're gonna lock up everybody. This is this whole version of New Jack prosecutors to deal with New Jack criminals. And if you saw New Jack City, that's what they're trying to do. They want their whole premise to stopping crime is to just lock every single solitary person up that they claim are true criminals. And I get frustrated with that because it's not fair. The system is broken, just like y'all said, because the system is going to continue to lock up people of color, throw the key away with them, but then you offer all type of options for people who are not of people of color, and that's where the problem comes in at. And as far as the guy Piyaki, I've listened to you a lot of times, and I'm going to tell you, I disagree with probably 95% of everything that you say, because it sounds to me like there's some type of programming going on with you, but I'm going to leave that alone. Here's what I am going to say. You said, I take my hat off to the man that trained him to do what he did. I don't take my hat off to the man that trained him. or the woman that trained him or whoever trained him, because what you did was you sent a boy to do a man's job. There were men there who were supposed to, quote, help law enforcement keep the peace during the protest, but you let a boy into the fray, and the boy committed an adult atrocity, not once, not twice, but three times. Now you want to cut him a break because you trained that killer to do exactly what he was supposed to do, and now y'all think it's not fair to do something to the people that you trained. Kyle Rittenhouse, Dylan Roof was trained to be a killer, and he killed. He did exactly what he was trained to do. And now you want to protect him, knowing that that at any particular point, that clown could have turned on anybody, and he did. And the last thing I'm going to say to this is you sat there and pretty much, not you, but pretty much the country sat there and tried to blame that protest on Black Lives Matter. But who was doing the looting? Who was doing the looting? Who was doing the shooting? But you want to say Black Lives Matter is the problem in this country. Anytime black people protest something, we're the bad guys. We're the criminals. We go out there, burn, loot, steal, do everything. And unfortunately, you just got that situation debunked. But nobody's going to listen to that. Nobody's going to say anything. Piaki, I respect your opinion, but I don't agree with your opinion at all. I respect it. So I just need you to understand that. And we can go on. I just needed to say that.
No, you know, in light of what you said, you know, I find it amazing that when we can look at it, which we saw in Milwaukee, these fires that were being set, there weren't black people at Black Lives Matter rally setting these fires. But black people were blamed for them. Okay.
Man, could I say something else? Thank you.
Yeah, I'm gonna get you 1 second. We still don't seem to be able to get convictions or trial dates for these white supremacist hate groups where there are no black people to blame. There are no Mexican people to blame. And I'm not talking about America as much as I'm talking about the system right now. Why is it we lag so far behind in hate groups and getting rid of them? We have no problem getting rid of the Black Panthers. That was quick. We'll go get Brett Hampton. We know where they're coming and we'll get rid of it. Go ahead, Bianchi.
Well, hate groups, as long as they're not violent, got a right to exist and say what it is that they want to say. You know, you make a mention about the justice system. I'm going to give you another.
Right. I'm not going to take away from your time. Hang on. I'm not going to take away from your time. Hate groups, as long as they're not violent, have a right to exist. I'm not going to disagree with that constitutionally. But I'm going to say, now I want you to name me a hate group that's nonviolent.
Well, I listen to some speak on their blog talk radio show, and they just talk in a lot of rhetoric. You have blacks that do the same thing. They talk a lot of rhetoric.
Right, but name the groups for me. You don't have to get –
you've got one group that's a faction of the Nazis. They have talk shows, and they talk a lot of rhetoric. Now, personally, what each and every individual have done, I can't name. And I don't know if they're the same group of those that you have seen that come out and do something hateful. I don't know. But I know this what they label themselves based on their show.
Piaki, the person that said, wanted to sit the president
Mister, let me
of
tell
the
you
United
something.
States
sir,
at that
sir,
time
let me say
said,
something. Let me say something. Would you stop mentioning my name? I don't even know yours.
Travis.
Now, can I finish what I was going to talk about?
This is the beauty of technology. You get to mute everybody today, so they got to listen to you and get their thoughts on this. Izzy, go ahead, and I'm Travis, and the other caller, I'm going to open y'all's mics, let Izzy finish his point, and I'm going to let y'all come back in respectfully. Go ahead, Iz.
I didn't have a point. I was just fascinated to hear how he thinks that Nazis are nonviolent.
Thank you. Okay.
You want me to answer that question?
Yeah.
If you listen to what I said closely, I said I listen to their rhetoric when they're speaking on their show. What they do individually, I don't know. I'm not there. And what I was going to say originally – go ahead, sir.
Instead of, if you want to know what they do, it's called Charlottesville. And also the Capitol riot.
Well, at Charlottesville, at the Capitol riots, that there is in dispute. Charlottesville, you had people there that was in favor of leaving the statue up and people there that was in favor of taking it down. I would have been in favor of leaving those historical monuments up because they was
Jesus
U.S. soldiers.
It was the Nazis.
Because U.S. soldiers fought in U.S. wars. Stan, I was going to talk about the U.S. Attorney General, Garland. And he wants to have FBI agents to show up at school board meetings under the pretense that parents that's keeping their school board elected members accountable, they're trying to call them terrorists. That there is another example. That's not the federal government's. That's not the federal government's partique. That's for local authorities to handle.
Right, but let me ask you this real quick, because you and I are not going to agree on a lot, but we can have discussions because that way I learn a little bit and I become a little more knowledgeable. But this whole school board thing, which I don't want to go down that rabbit hole today. Trust me, I'm going to do a show on that. And a lot of this is stemming from, and we like to say it's the pandemic, it's the mandatory mask mandates. Bullshit. No, it's not. It's about critical race theory, which I call the teaching of facts. That which the rest of the rest of the known world is teaching their children what really happened in America, and we're living this pipe dream here. And I've watched some of these school board meetings with these privileged parents that walk in there. Well, my kid, if you talk about what white people did to black people, my kid will feel inferior. Well, how do you think the black kid feels when what happened to their parents and grandparents is not discussed? And just because they dare bring that issue up, we get into our comfort zones. And go ahead, Ed.
I just want to point out there's some inconsistencies in what he said. Number one, Garland didn't deputize the FBI to go on the school boards and start arresting people and calling them terrorists. He released a memo that advised Justice Department branches in states where they are having issues to work with local law enforcement to deal with those issues. And the reason they did that is because school boards were becoming the meetings were becoming violent and aggressive, and people were making threats against members of the school board on these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Another point is the critical race theory is not taught in it's taught in college,
mm-hmm.
not taught in high school, not taught in elementary school, not taught in middle school. So there's a big, I hate the party things, but there's a party line on this issue. Garland did not, he didn't deputize the FBI to go around and start arresting parents and calling them terrorists or something like that. He released a memo advising Justice Department branches to work with local law enforcement to protect members of school boards during community meetings that have come close to and have ended in violent action.
And why is he? Because we saw what happened when information or intelligence, or lack thereof, but intelligence was given about possible hostile acts, and the government did what? Nothing. And what happened? We had January 6th. What do we have now?
Can I say something, Stan?
Yeah, come on, bro.
Can I say something? This is Travis G. Evans talking. I don't hide my name. I know what I'm talking about. The only reason this situation has got to the level with Kyle Rittenhouse that it has gotten, because a president got on television and made an opinion on something that he should have never opened his mouth and said anything about. He said, it looks like self-defense to me. Every time that dude says something, it changes the balance of everything that happens.
Wait a minute. Hold on, Travis. I'm going to let you finish your point because you just hit something that I got to rewind a minute. Let's go back to when Obama talked about what happened to Trayvon, and he said, that could have been my son. He was raped through the coals for that.
Yes.
But yet Trump was not raped through the coals, but he basically, for all intents and purposes, said the same thing about Kyle Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Stan.
January 6th was a tourist attraction. It was tourism. On a date that the Capitol was closed for a special session with the vice president in there making a decision on the election, it was tourism. And everybody bought that crap. Everybody.
Look here, we're going to have to do, we're going to have to do a day six show because we're at the 14-minute mark. Go ahead, P.I.K. I got about
I didn't call here to talk about January 6th, but I'll tell you what, the man that shot Abbott, he needs to be prosecuted. Well, that's from what I've seen, that woman was not a threat to anyone. But as far as Garland is concerned, his memo is dangerous. You know, sir, you got children listening to this show. And that type of
and
response.
And you're feeding children a bunch of crap. That's what you're
well,
doing.
Well, at least I
you're
had my
children. You're feeding children a bunch of crap. You break
I'm not
going to
argue with you, Stan. I'm not going to argue with somebody on your show. When you come on our show, Stan, we give you respect. So I'm not going to argue back and forth with this gentleman that's trying to disrupt your show.
Go ahead, brother. I got it back. I'm giving you a minute. He's muted.
Yeah,
right
but
now.
No. What I was going to say, he made mention about Garland. And his memo is good enough of what he had in his mind or was put to do in his mind. You know, you talk about prosecutors. You got a woman there in Chicago, Kim Fox. And from what I read and what I heard, where you had a faction, she called a faction. It was a shootout between some people. These were black suspects. And rather than lock them up, and I don't know, after the police had captured them, she labeled the incident as a family faction. Here you got people in the street shooting. That's not no faction. That's tyranny between these families. They're terrorizing the neighborhood. It's a lot of blame to go around, Sinan. Too bad all officers and incidents wasn't as good as you were when you was on the beat. Thank you very much, sir.
I appreciate you calling, as always. And like I said, it's not important whether you and I agree, because it's refreshing to hear from somebody who has the other side sometimes. So, you know, I appreciate you having the courage, you know, for lack of a better expression, to call. But I appreciate you, brother. Look here, we're at the 12-minute mark. What I want to do, I still got Big Travis here. He finally calmed down, took a woosah pill. But what I want to do is I want to, in 1 minute, what do we need to do to fix our judge situation here in America? And I'll even say 2 minutes because it's hard to get it into one. And Travis, I'm going to start with you. To fix the situation with our judges in America, what do we need to do?
Vote and term limits. That's all I got to say.
Well, damn, this going to be a quick show because you just took my two. I mean, that was mine. You just
that
took my
good,
two.
I was going to say that back, man.
Is you agree? Vote and term limits?
Yes. Yeah. Voting, term limits, I'd add in maybe greater transparency in terms of campaigning and how they're campaigning, greater oversight. We need to empower and demand and incentivize these oversight organizations that are meant to be holding these men and women accountable. We need to make sure that they're doing that and that the processes that they use to do that are transparent and known and publicly released. This stuff keeps happening behind closed doors. You can't vote clearly.
Yeah, how about the C word? Consequences. How about that one? That's what's missing, the C word. Consequences. Big John. Brother, how are we going to fix this mess?
Well, I think a lot of stuff has to do with us. We play a role in this, and by this I mean education. We have to educate our community. We have to educate them about voting and how to go about picking a candidate to support, how to go about selecting someone to put in to a courthouse or whatever the case may be. We have to be involved in the system. We just can't say, okay, we're going to change this, change that, and then put someone in there who's not educated. We have to begin to educate our community, and I think that's where the key is for me, is educating our community, letting them know that they do have the power to bring about the change.
You know, brother, I want to thank everybody who showed up today, Izzy, being here, Big John, Travis for calling in, Piaki for calling in. And like I said, this show is not where it's not incumbent that you agree with all of us. It's
and
not.
Billy Clark.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? We're going to get the big brother Billy. You know, I wish he was still on the Dallas County. Y'all got a decision to make up there. And I can tell you, this show is controversial. We're not afraid to call folks out or talk about issues. And I've never once called Attorney Billy Clark. And he hasn't shown up. Sometimes I'm going from A to B. I'm in between the events. I'll be there. He's always come. He's never run away from any of the topics on the show. You know, he gets big, big shout-outs. Appreciate him being here. With that, you know, any final words?
Yes. You asked the question, what is American justice? And you said something behind it. You was asking Billy Clark that question, but you never gave him a chance to answer. What was that you asked behind it?
You know, do we want justice? Or do we want truth? Or do we want revenge? Or do we want
the last one,
what benefits our class, our particular class? And that one is important because it's easy when I say our particular class for folks to say, well, you're talking about black people. No, I'm saying that the justice the elite people in this country get is not the justice the rest of us get. And that includes elite black folks, too. You don't believe me? Let Jay-Z get arrested and see how Jay-Z gets treated. Throwing that out there as an example so don't nobody take it. Look at what's happening to Dave Chappelle just for stating his opinion. So if we want justice, if we want truth, if we want discussion, we can't be offended to the point of revenge because we don't like what the person said. The court system, I would say, by and large today, is not just historically in how it treats poor people and people of color in this country. You don't believe me? Go look in the prison. And look at the population makeup of this country. You know, Jeffrey Epstein is gone. Who's in jail? Nobody. Well, we all forgot. Jeffrey Epstein, what did he do? That's bullshit. But we're locking up human traffickers, Juan and Joe and poor Carla. We're locking them up every day. We got them. But the Epstein thing, where they were trafficking people, why? Because they somehow put them on a Learjet as a supposed to put him in a Cavalier and driving to the next state because they went on a Learjet to a foreign country? It's okay.
He had too many friends.
Exactly. And
there were too many people on those flights.
Right. Well, is he the Mayflower Madam? Heidi Fleiss. I mean, how far do we want to go? We know these people have dirt. We know they do. And we know big people's names are in there in that dirt. Why is nobody in jail for that? But we have no problem with getting Pookie, Ray Ray, Juan, or Jerry and Joe. We have no problem coming down into the lower end neighborhoods and locking up everybody for anything. And according to the one judge in Tennessee, we're willing to lock up teenagers, including an 8-year-old, and make up a charge to put them in jail because they didn't step in and break up a fight. That's bullshit.
It is, because she didn't have to make up anything to do that.
Exactly.
Done it.
Hey, Stan, you said, what is American justice? And I'm asking this question off of yours. Is it better to set a guilty man free or send an innocent man to jail?
I would say, for me, in the history of justice in America, as I can read it and recite it and present it, and then I have to live with that, which me as a black man in America today who has to go out and hope I don't get arrested because somebody's uncomfortable, my answer is simple. While the concept, the building blocks are there, American justice remains to be seen.
Andy?
I kind of reject that question because both of those things are happening constantly right now. Innocent people are going to jail, and guilty people are being let free. And I think the question kind of, philosophical questions like that, kind of, it's why I have a problem with when we talk about the judicial system. There's so much conversation to distract from the blatant bias and blatant injustices that are happening, and they cloud it over with this concept of the philosophy of law. There's too much philosophical conversations happening about real shit that's going on. So I choose neither of those things. and say change the system that allows that to be happening on a daily basis. I think that we have to deal with the fact that there's a lot of rampant naivete and idealism when it comes to our justice system. Like the whole concept of beyond a reasonable doubt. That doesn't mean beyond all doubt. That doesn't mean 100% certainty. What it means is that we have a criminal justice system that we have built and designed. We've built and designed into it like the possibility of error, yet we don't have any way of correcting that error.
No accountability.
Like we have prosecutors have discretion to throw out cases, but they rarely do and often defer to law enforcement. Defense attorneys, you are entitled to a lawyer to defend you.
If you can afford
that entitlement, you have no decision on how good that lawyer is going to be, how overworked they are. You have defense attorneys in this country that are given 7 minutes or less to adjudicate a case, which is impossible. So I think I choose neither. Like I would choose a not. I would skip over that question because it really attack the problem or address the issue, because both of those things are happening all the time, and neither one is better than the other. They just keep perpetuating the problem.
And the rich are the ones that are guilty being set free,
mm-hmm.
and the poor or so-called middle class are the innocent that's being sent to prison. So it is that privilege. They benefit all the way around the board.
It's not even that they're getting set free. The guilty are—they're not even being brought to task,
you know,
or brought to court, or arrested, or tried.
If I could say,
politicians, like we don't want to get into the January 6th thing, but we have politicians that are—we have senators that are still in office that it's online, it's forever, it's in print that they promoted and pushed for what happened on January 6th. Nothing's happened to them.
John,
they haven't even lost their jobs.
If I can give an analogy, you know,
yes.
When's the last time you saw the zookeeper in a cage? We charge the animals with being violent when they are just merely reacting against the conditions they're forced to live by and didn't perform right. The ringmaster in jail. You've never seen a zookeeper in a cage. It's always let's condemn the lion for being a lion.
And I think another thing that needs to happen in terms of these conversations is that a lot of times when we have these conversations, and Stan, you've done it, we've all done it, there seems to be, anytime we get into this conversation about the American justice system, we always have to add of how it's worse than other countries. You know, America is still the greatest. Like, it's way worse than it is. It's way better than it is in other countries. So we need to stop doing that because, number one, that's entirely untrue. There are certain aspects of our justice system that we hold the number one slot hard in. We incarcerate more children than any country in the world, and we sentence more children to life sentences than any other country in the world. Those are our big stats right there. And another thing that I hate is that by constantly comparing ourselves to these worst countries, all we're doing is saying that we are marginally better than the lowest bar,
mm-hmm.
which is not impressive to me anymore. You don't get to brag about being slightly better than a place that's only slightly worse than you are.
And it's the same participation trophy. Why you deny others? But we got to get out of here at that point. We're at like 3 seconds on Block Talk, 2-1. Block Talk will end without us. But I appreciate everybody. We're going to get out. Stay John, Izzy, you know, Bianchi, Billy Clark, Travis.
Bianchi, there are no nonviolent Nazis. If you look in the dictionary on the definition of oxymoron, it's nonviolent Nazi.
We're out. Everybody, peace.
Peace.